Good morning. So I'm going to try and stay right on the microphone because I'm a little hoarse this morning. And if I let my voice drop, just do this. And if I get too much on the mic, just do this. And I'll try and get it right. Could you pray with me, please? God, thank you for the gift of this day. Thank you for the gift of this time. Thank you for the gift of this place and these people. Father, please let me get out of the way. Please let your light shine off of me so that my brothers and sisters can see what you've done in my life. And let me don't say anything you don't want me to say. But please, if there's something you'd like me to say, please help me to say it. In your name I pray. Amen. So I'd like to start with one of the big ones, the 23rd Psalm. And I think Pastor Harkins actually had this up recently. But if you can read that, it's such a beautiful psalm. This is the King James Version, New King James Version. And let's just read that together, if you don't mind. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen. Thank you. So the focus of the sermon today is I'm not a theologian. I've got a Bible at home, and I've read it, and read it enough. It falls apart in places. I've underlined it. I've argued with it. I've had questions with it, and I've really encountered God with it, but I haven't been to seminary. And I think everybody knows that we have better preachers in terms of education that come through. But what I have is some experience and some testimony I'd like to give and use some of the scripture that's been very helpful to me to frame it. I think of being in the valley of the shadow as those parts of my life when I'm in a place where I just don't want to be. It could be fear. It could be sadness. And I'm having a hard time seeing the light when I'm in that shadow, in the valley of the shadow. The biggest shadow I've faced in my Christian walk, which did not begin for me until I was in my 30s, the biggest shadow for me has been walking with cancer a few times. And God has taught me so many things through that experience that I thought it might help somebody if I shared them. So let me start by saying that I am thoroughly convinced that God, who loves me beyond my ability to imagine, did not give me cancer. God doesn't do things like that in my experience. But God is all-powerful, and God could, and I've seen God, and in my own life I've seen God cure incurable maladies. So I know that God could have cured my cancer, could have spared me cancer, but the God who loves me beyond imagining allowed me to have cancer and allowed me to walk through the shadow. So what I'd like to talk about is when I was in the shadow, in the valley of the shadow, how I could, I began to see God walking with me in the shadow, and how he comforted me in the shadow, and what he taught me as we walked together in the shadow. The first time I encountered cancer was, I was 46 years old. I'm 62 now. And the cancer I got was kidney cancer, which is very rare in a person 44 years old. It's the odds that I read were 1 in 60,000. So I felt very special. And if you went online, which I would strongly advise against if you ever get a serious diagnosis, wait till you talk to the doctors, but I couldn't wait, and I got online and I Googled it. And what I saw online, that I had a 40% chance of surviving 5 years with that, with kidney cancer. So I was in the shadow. Matthew, who's in college now, my oldest son, was 2 years old. And I just couldn't bear the thought that I might not get to grow, see him grow up. But I saw God in the shadow with me, and I was comforted. How did I know God was in the shadow with me? Let me tell you how they diagnosed that cancer. What makes kidney cancer particularly dangerous is that it doesn't give symptoms until it's often too late. So by the time you know you have cancer, you have a symptom, it may have already spread. That's what makes for that serious mortality rate. So this is how I learned I had cancer. It was maybe 4:30 in the morning, and Matthew had decided he had had enough sleep for the night and came in to wake up Alice and I. We did not think that we had had enough sleep for the night, and it was my turn, so I got up and went in the other room with Matthew. And because of I did as an act of survival, I just put in a videotape with some cartoons on it and tried to sleep. And as I was sleeping, Matthew did something that he's never done anything like this before or after. As I was trying to sleep and he was watching the cartoons, he started stacking up a bunch of pillows behind me. And then he climbed up on the pillows and he jumped off the pillows and he got me right in the kidney with his knee. And I woke up with a start and I said, "That really hurt." And within a day or two, I started to pass blood. But I had played rugby in college, and I was used to being hit. And I thought, well, maybe I just have a bruised kidney. This will pass. I'll just ignore it, and it'll go away. But that year, this happened in late December, and that year was one of the years when you couldn't get the flu shot until January 1st, unless you were in a high-risk group. And since I had a child at home, I wanted to get the flu shot, so I'd scheduled an appointment with our doctor on January 3rd. So I went in, and I got the flu shot, and she said, "How's everything else?" And I said, "Fine." And I started to leave, and something stopped me, and I said, "Well, there is this one thing." And she said, "What's that?" And I said, "Well, I am passing blood." she said, "That's not normal." And I said, "Well, I gave her the thing. I played rugby in college. Matthew jumped on me. I think it's just a bruised kidney." And she said, "Bob, car accidents bruise kidneys like that, not 40-pound two-year-olds. So she said, just go get a ultrasound. And I did, and they diagnosed the cancer. So I looked at that, and I said, that can't happen by chance. You can't stack up all those things. Matthew doing the thing he's never done before, 4 or 5 days before the doctor's appointment. That can't happen by chance. And I felt God was with me. So whatever was going to happen, I knew that God was in me. I was in the shadow. I was scared. I was sad. But God, I took such comfort in the way it was discovered. I knew God was with me. And then there was more. My dad, who's passed away now, was a country doctor, and he was a good country doctor, but he was retired, and I was his project. So he had taken. I was in shock. I didn't know what to do, and he had taken my X-rays, and he shopped them around to all the best cancer hospitals to make sure of the diagnosis. And then he did some research to find the very best doctor for someone with kidney cancer in their 40s. And what he came up with was a guy named Dr. Russo at Memorial Sloan Kettering. And he checked at MD Anderson in Dallas. He checked at the Cleveland Clinic. But it turns out that the best guy in the world for what I had was about 10 miles from my house, and they took my insurance, right? And then the problem, this guy was so good that usually he's backed up for months, but of all the people in the world, a long time ago, my dad had done a favor for his dad. We grew up upstate, and Dr. Russo's father was from Ithaca, New York, and he'd asked my father if he would let Dr. Russo kind of follow him around for 3 or 4 weeks as a college student to see if he wanted to be a doctor. So my dad actually knew the best guy in the world who was 10 miles away and was able to call in that favor, and Dr. Russo was so happy to help me return that favor. And I went up to meet with him, and I looked at his diplomas, and we had gone to the same college. He was at the same college with me, so we had that going for us. And he said, Bob, when you read about that 60% or 40% more, what is it, 60% mortality rate, that's for people who don't discover it. Most people don't know they have it. You know you have it. We can treat that. I'm going to cut out half the kidney, and you'll still have a kidney and a half left. It'll be great. Great for you. So what are the odds? What are the odds? I could just feel God all over this thing. He let me have cancer. He let me walk through the shadow, but I knew God was right there. And I'll just never forget, There's a room you're in after you're all in your hospital gown and everything, and I was going to have this surgery. We didn't know what they'd find when they went in. I'd said goodbye to my family. I was all by myself. I'm very nearsighted. I had my contacts out. I couldn't see anything. And Dr. Russo comes up with his blue hat on and his gown, and he says, Bob, this is going to be like bad dental surgery. Thanks, you know, and so I got through it. But God walked with me through that experience, and he taught me a few things that it was good for a man in his 40s in mid-career to learn, and I was very driven in my career. He taught me through that experience that I needed to look at my priorities. I needed to spend more time with my family. I needed to worry less about the small stuff. I needed to learn not to project, not to constantly be worrying about getting cancer again. I learned to stick with the diagnosis I had. If they told me I was cancer-free, I was cancer-free. I appreciated things more. I can remember one summer day, that summer afterwards, I said, boy, if everything I went through with that surgery and that pain, if all I got was this day, it was all worth it. I just, I cared more about people because I knew how precious, how special time is, how this time we have together. I made more time for God, made more time for my wife. We had two more children. We started the Gospel All-Stars. I started a business. I had a much richer life for the last 16 years than I ever would have had if I hadn't walked through the shadow with God and let him teach me and let him comfort me and grow close to him. So another shadow metaphor I love about the spiritual walk is they say the spiritual walk, this comes from an old book from the 1910s about Christian mysticism. And it says that the spiritual walk is like a spiral up a mountain. And there's a sunny side of the mountain, and there's a shady side of the mountain. And if you just keep walking with God on the spiritual path when you're on the shady side, you'll come around the mountain and be back in the sun. And when you are, you're going to be higher up, and you're going to see more, and you're going to understand more. And that's been my experience. So I thought I had learned everything I needed to learn from cancer. God did not. And 8 years later, I was in for my follow-up in 2008, 7 years later, and they said, Bob, we see something growing in that other half of your kidney. And I didn't want to go back in the shadow. I didn't want to go through it was a painful surgery. It's a big incision. I didn't want to go through that again. And so I called in my prayer army, and everybody at Greenwood was praying for me. Everybody was praying for a miracle. And after a couple months, they're watching it. I'm going in every month because they're not sure yet. After a couple months, they said, Bob, we're not sure. We thought it was cancer, but it might be benign, which means no surgery, no pain. And I'm like, prayer warriors, keep praying. I think we're winning, you know. And if I just pray harder, if I just have more faith, and if everybody just prays harder, we're going to beat this thing, you know. And I went back a few months later, and they said, Bob, we're certain now it is a malignancy. It's cancer, and we got to take the rest of that kidney. And I want to share that experience because I want to talk about something really, really important I learned about the power of prayer. I know, I told you at the beginning, that I know from personal experience that a prayer and God's answer to that prayer can solve an incurable illness just like that. And this is I have about three sermons in me. This is for another sermon. But when I was in my 30s, I was a very lost soul. I often say I wasn't the first person in my family to go to college, but I was the first one to go to juvenile court. You know, so I was a problem child, and I had developed into a full-blown alcoholic and a drug addict, and I was going to die from it, and I was out of options. I couldn't fight it. I couldn't stop. And although I did not believe in God, I thought I was an atheist. I was a bad agnostic because I believed in luck and fate and love at first sight. That all takes a greater power. But someone said, when I ran out of every other option, they said, get on your knees and ask God to stop you from drinking. And I got on my knees and I said to the floor, because I didn't believe in God, I said, please help me. And I felt, I just felt every muscle in my body relax. I felt like someone was stroking my back and that everything was going to be okay. And I laid down on my bed and I slept better than I can remember sleeping since I was a baby. And that was 29 years ago, and I've never had another drink or another drug. So I know that God can answer a prayer and take away a fatal illness. It's happened to me. But after we had prayed and prayed and prayed, and God didn't take away my cancer that second time, I thought, what happened? Am I like Peter? When Jesus said, "Come to me across the water," and he started walking across the water, and he lost his faith and he sank, is it my fault that if I just had more faith, would I have been cured this time? And so I went home, and I was just looking, God, where are you? I'm in the valley again. Where are you? I couldn't see those signs again. And I started leafing through the Bible. Sometimes I'll just do something like this and stop and see what I open up to. And this is the passage that I opened up to as I flipped through. And I just felt that feeling of electricity, like, oh, here you are. You're with me. The passage I opened up to, the words that jumped out at me were from 2 Corinthians, where Paul says, I was given a thorn in my flesh. And I'm thinking, I got a thorn in my flesh. How can... He says, a messenger of Satan sent to torment me. Now, like I said before, God didn't give me that cancer. Three times, said Paul, I pleaded with the Lord to take it away. I've been praying to God to take away my cancer. I've been praying time and time again, but he's not taking it away. And I read on. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, said Paul, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong through God's power through me. Now, I don't have the faith of Paul, right? I'm a pretty faithful guy, but I don't hold myself out as having the faith of Paul. So I can't say that I always delight in persecution, but I am comforted. And I was so comforted when I saw this. I'm not going through this again because I didn't pray hard enough. I'm going through this because the God who loves me feels that I should go through it. And the God who loves me is telling me that his grace will be sufficient for me. Everything will be okay. Whether I live or whether I die, everything will be okay. Everything I'm worried about, my kids, my business, everything will be okay. And it was such a relief to me. And the second, so I learned something about prayer in that, when you're in the valley, is God may not spare me the valley. Life is life. But God will always, in my experience, let me know that he's there and find a way to comfort me. And the other miracle from that second experience was I knew from the first time I had it that the very worst part of it was going to be self-pity, feeling sorry for myself. Oh, I'm not going to dance at Jane's wedding. And I knew that would be awful. So as I walked out of the doctor's office when they said, it is cancer, it's got to come out, I said, God, please take my self-pity. And I got on the train from the Upper East Side, and I came home, and I opened the doors, and you know who was in our living room? Nina from Africa, right? And Nina, I'm going to have a doctor at one of the best hospitals in the world, which is 10 miles from my house, do a painful but fairly low-risk surgery. And when it's done, I'm going to be coming back to my own house in Park Slope. I'm going to be fully recovered from that surgery in about a month. Nina has been living 16 years in Uganda with a heart problem that would have been addressed here as a child. So she's not getting enough circulation to her scalp. It's blue. She's had it's affected her whole life. And through Samaritan's Purse, they have flown her to the United States. So I'm going to have the surgery, and it's going to hurt, and I'm going to be home in 2 days. While I'm doing that, this girl in my living room is going to have her chest cracked open. They're going to take her heart out of her body, freeze it, put her on a machine, tinker with her heart for a while, put it back in her chest, sew her back together, and when she's done, she's going back to Uganda. And as much as I wanted to feel sorry for myself, I could not do it. People were saying, "Oh, Bob, you're being so brave." There was no bravery. I wanted to feel sorry for myself, but I couldn't with Nina in the house. Now, I didn't know. We were standing in the back of the chapel when they talked about this Samaritan's Purse project, and they said, we need a place for the girl who's coming for the surgery and her mother and a nurse to stay. And I looked at Alice, and they'll be there for several weeks. And I looked at Alice because we had built a mother-in-law suite for Alice's mother to move in and take care of our kids. And she came in, and she totally figured out what we were up to. And she said, I have raised my kids. I'm not going to raise your kids. So we had this empty mother-in-law suite, and it was just clear to us that we were in the best position probably of anybody in the congregation to take them in. So we did. Now, I didn't know I was going to have cancer again when we made that commitment, right? I had no idea, but God knew. God can, and this has really struck me lately, is how freely God moves backwards and forwards in time. I mean, God knew that was coming, moved back several months, set us up to actually be at church that Sunday, with nothing going on with the kids, and to hear that message, to raise our hand, and to have this woman in the house. And it made that whole surgery just so much lighter for me, I can't tell you. So I was in the shadow again, but God was with me, and God comforted me. And God, again, God taught me through that experience. When I started to get that feeling again of sadness around the kids, we were, before I went in for the surgery, but I knew I had the cancer again, we're having just this really fun family moment around the table. Matthew was still there. We got all three kids. Nobody's fighting. That's a miracle right there. And they were having this beautiful time. And out of the blue, my friend, the accuser, who sits on my shoulder sometimes, goes, "You're going to die and not see these children grow up." Oh, thanks for sharing, you know. So, and all of a sudden I was so sad and so morose. And then God spoke to me on the other shoulder and said, "How and when you die is none of your business. That's my business. How you live, that's your business." And it stuck with me. You know, I didn't, And every time I started to get sad like that, it would strike me that that's none of my business whether I die or don't die. That's God's business. So God comforted me. God taught me. And life went on since 2008. And it's been good. And then this fall, I got the word I'm going back in the shadow again. And this time, the cancer wasn't just in my kidney. It had metastasized, and it was all over, it's all over my lymph nodes. It's all over my liver. And it's in. And when I met the doctor at Sloan Kettering, he tried to make that sound as good as you can, and it's very difficult to make that sound good. And I'm in the business of cross-examining experts, and I've been doing it for a long time, and I just stayed after him. And he said, well, we got some treatment. It's helping some people. And I needed to know because I have a family that depends on me. I have a business. I have employees. I have partners. I have clients. I needed to know. So I pushed him and just kept asking questions until finally he said, okay, what you have is incurable, and the typical timeline for this is about 6 months. Well, glad I pushed. You know, that was pretty heavy news. So we're back there again. He said, but there is some medicine that's experimental. We've been experimenting with it here. Can't cure it. We can't operate. There's too much. We can't do radiation. There's too much. There's no chemo for this. But what we have now, it's worked since some people can hit the pause button for a while and stop the tumors from growing. Now, hitting the pause button wouldn't help if I had a lot of symptoms and I was already sick. But I just had to stop because once more I knew I had cancer months and months and months before I should have known if it wasn't for God. Because the way it worked for me is I went back to Sloan Kettering in June of this year, and I got a clean bill of health. They said, you're fine. And Matthew and I went up in the mountains of New Hampshire, and we're climbing the Appalachian Trail, and I was pretty proud of myself for an old coot. I was scamping around like a goat, and I felt really as good as I felt in my adult life. 3 weeks later, you remember some of those monster storms we had in July, really heavy rain, and I'm out in the backyard trying to clear our storm drain before it floods the tenant's apartment in the basement. They don't like that, and I don't like it, and I'm like the kid trying to put his fingers in the dike and stop it. I can see there's a little well that's filling up, and if that fills up, then the apartment's flood. And I'm losing the war. We're bailing out, and I'm running around, and I've got a drill with a snake on it, you know, plumber's snake, and I'm trying to snake the drain. And Jane's holding the umbrella over me, and I got the first boots I could find, which are way too big. And while I'm running around out there, in early July, 3 weeks after they gave me the clean bill of health, I just missed a step. And I came down, and I broke some ribs. It really hurt. Once again, Alice said, you should get an x-ray. And I said, I played rugby in college. It's just broken ribs. So I went down, I got an x-ray, and they said, we don't see any broken ribs. We don't see any. It's just bruised. Just take care of it. Now, if you don't, I think most of you know Alice. Alice is Chinese-American. And so Alice said, I know they didn't see anything, but I want you to get some acupuncture. And then I went to work, and my Korean law partner says, you got to get acupuncture. The ribs will heal faster. And I'd had acupuncture after that second surgery. It helped. Now, I've been married for 25 years, and I knew that if I got the acupuncture and the ribs still hurt, that was sore ribs. If I didn't get the acupuncture and the ribs hurt, that was my fault, and I'd get no sympathy, right? So I went to the acupuncturist, who is also a medical doctor, and he said, we got to do an x-ray before I'll treat you. And I said, I just had an x-ray. And he said, well, sometimes right after you break ribs, they won't show up on the x-ray. You got to have an x-ray. I got to be sure it's not bleeding. So I go down the street to get the x-ray at the Chinatown x-ray factory. And lo and behold, they find all this stuff growing in my belly, which they had not seen at Sloan Kettering 3 weeks before. So that, the only reason I knew that I had cancer again in time to do anything about it, in time to make any plans, was because of this impossible set of circumstances. A guy that was climbing around the mountains in the White Mountains with a backpack on, falls in his backyard, breaks ribs, gets an x-ray. One x-ray doesn't show anything, gets another x-ray, and then they catch it. That for my money, that can't happen by chance. God made that happen, right? God gave me time. So how am I doing on time? Speaking of time, I think I'm going real long, so I'll cut to the chase. But all throughout that walk, it was a shock, believe me, and with two young kids at home, it was awful. There's been a lot of tears, but God has been with us every moment. I don't have time to tell you all the ways God has comforted us and my family. He's shown us this. He's shown us that. He's shown people that have been through what we're going through, families that have survived and been strong. And so I had learned from that second time, a lot of people are praying for me, but I didn't want to get up on the prayer board, and even now I don't want to be so public about it that it's scary for my kids to come to church. This is a refuge for them. And it's kind of scary for them if they see their dad's name up there all the time. But I've got a lot of people quietly praying for me. And I know that God can work miracles. Totally believe that. But what I find for me is that when I pray for God to heal this, it's same as the last time. I get tighter and tighter and tighter. But when I say, God, when I pray like I work for God instead of praying like God works for me, God, please do this, God do, which forget the please, God do this. When I pray, God, let me see you. Let me see you in this. Show me how to be of service. Let me know what to do. How can I help my family? Please show me, God. When I pray like I work for God, the muscles relax, I get calm, and I get comforted. So I'm in the shadow, God's walking with me, and yesterday we got a little bit of the other kind of miracle, the kind that I like better, is I went back to the doctor after August, September, October on the medicine, and he came in and he was smiling. And he doesn't bring good news often. he's the last stop on the block at Sloan Kettering. And he says, we got some good scans, CT x-ray scans. He said, the medicine is working for you. And so I'm not looking at months. I'm looking at hopefully years. And I feel pretty good. My voice is a little hoarse, but I'll take that. So God is with me. And the great peace that comes, God has spent, moved backwards and forwards through time. God has spent 16 years teaching me and preparing me for this trip through the valley. And I know that God is with me. I can feel God around me. I can every once in a while, I can't see it to point you to it, but I can see on the horizon a place of incredible peace and incredible love. I'm not afraid of going there, I got to tell you. And I can feel God's comfort around my family. God's rod and his staff, it comforts me. And he's going to care for me. He's going to care for my family. And he is going to care for every single one of us. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen. Thank you.